CBS Eye on the World, I'm John Batchelor. To Nicaragua, Central America, Daniel Ortega and his wife control Nicaragua absolutely. However, now we take a story back to the 20th century, thanks to Mary Anastasia O'Grady. She is the America's columnist and editor at the Wall Street Journal editorial board, to introduce the younger Daniel Ortega and the Society of Jesus in Nicaragua. Mary, a very good evening to you. This is extremely helpful to understand the evolving approach Ortega takes to institutions in Nicaragua, which is now considered to be a non-transparent dictatorship. The original Daniel Ortega in the 1970s, he saw himself in some fashion as a communist, but that did not upset everyone in and around him in Central America. What about the Society of Jesus and the Catholic priests in Central America? What was their opinion of Ortega at the beginning? Good evening to you.
Well, good evening, John. Daniel Ortega, of course, was a Marxist in the 1970s when he led the Sandinista revolution against dictator Anastasio Somoza. But he had allies, and one was many members of the Society of Jesus, or as we usually call them, the Jesuits. They were, not all of them, but many of them, were following something they called liberation theology, and it shared a number of Marxist, concepts. And that meant that, you know, when it came to the propaganda, educating, and sort of fighting the war, the revolution that Daniel Ortega was engaged in, the Jesuits were, in a sense, allies because they supported this social justice agenda of the Marxists. And when Daniel Ortega and the Sandinistas actually toppled Somoza, which was 1979, he ended up having in his cabinet, he installed his own military dictatorship to replace Somoza. And in his cabinet, he had, over the years, three Catholic priests. One was a Jesuit, one was a Marinol, and one was just a diocesan priest. But that was all within the context of liberation theology, which, as I say, shared some of the concepts and ideology of Marxism.
Fast forward, Daniel Ortega lost an election in 1990. It was observed. It was a straightforward election. He then attempted a comeback in 96 and 2001. And you report, importantly, he was unsuccessful until he embraced Catholicism. How so?
Well, it wasn't only embracing Catholicism. That was part of his image makeover. Yes, he lost elections in 1996 and again in 2001. But he engaged in this sort of, you know, he remained in politics. The Sandinista revolution became a political party, and he was the leader of that. And he engaged in, you know, politicking, which was basically to convince Nicaraguans that he would be a good president if elected. And part of that included a very public embrace of Catholicism. Some call it a conversion, although I don't know if he was baptized at birth. But he also married his long-term partner, Rosario Murillo, in the Catholic Church. And he had the support of the cardinal at that time. He also, you know, gave a lot of lip service to democracy and, you know, market economy and investment and those kinds of things. So he did this general makeover. But he also did something else, which I think demonstrates how he, even with all that, would not have gotten back to power without the help of the corrupt right. And that was that he managed to convince he controlled seats in Congress, and he managed to convince members of the opposition to allow a lowering of the threshold that it took to win in a first round. So he got them to lower it to 35%. And he could never probably have gotten over 40% of the vote because people remembered very bitterly what it was like when he was at the helm. And he got, you know, something like 37% of the vote. But because he managed to get the threshold lowered in exchange for keeping corrupt members of the right out of jail, he was able to win in the first round. And that's how he got back into power. And once he got back into power, he started using money to buy alliances in Nicaragua, and that boosted his control of the government.
Two decades later, now we come to the payoff. The Society of Jesus, initially in the 1970s, endorsing liberation theology, and Mr. Ortega adopting and evidencing Catholic belief in the early part of this century. But now, the Jesuits, I noticed these items, Mary, and you now explained in context the confiscation of Catholic funds and the closing down of institutions. What is driving the break between Ortega and the Society of Jesus and the Catholic priests in general?
Well, first of all, we should mention that once he got back into power, it coincided with a lot of money coming out of Venezuela because oil prices were still high. That was 2007. And Hugo Chavez had a lot of ideological sympathy for Ortega. And he was sending subsidies to Nicaragua. And there was lots of money sloshing around. And Ortega used it to, as I mentioned before, to buy favor across the aisle in the business community and so forth. And he also began himself buying up a lot of land, getting control of businesses. And in fact, people described him as the second coming of Somoza. He was exactly like Somoza. He was taking away civil liberties. He began going after the press. And little by little, he consolidated power. And then in 2014, when oil prices collapsed and Venezuela was no longer a sugar daddy for Nicaragua, people started to say, hey, wait a minute, we're not such big fans of Ortega anymore. And if he had to face an election and in a free country, he would have gotten turned out of power. So he began to use the power he had accumulated to shut down media, to close down universities, to chase his political opponents out of the public square. And you know, the last group that he's gone after just last month is the Jesuits. And the reason is because as mistaken as the Jesuits were, they did not have in mind the second coming of Somoza when they were backing Sandinismo. So, you know, they've started to become a place where students go to talk about liberty and justice, social justice and those sorts of things in opposition to Ortega. And he doesn't like that, so he's gone after them.
Mary Anastasia O'Grady, writing the America's column for the Wall Street Journal editorial page. We've just had a wonderful lesson on nearly 45 years of how it is you can use democracy to maintain power. Is that one lesson here, Mary? We have a few seconds.
Yeah, I mean, he would, under the guise of democracy, once he was elected, he started destroying institutions.
Right.
And then when it was time to turn him out, people didn't like him anymore. It was too late. People didn't have enough liberty to fight back against him.
I'm John Batchelor.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.